Ajira, if we're able to proceed in terms of quorum.
Morning, Chairperson. We have a quorum. You can proceed, Chair. We have a quorum.
All right, thank you. Maybe officially, let me greet you, honorable members, the deputy minister. I saw he was on the platform. Deputy Minister Honorable Mapulane, and must also greet the department and representatives from the entities that I saw on the platform, members of civil society, fellow South Africans who are following our deliberations from different platforms. As well as greetings to our support staff who always make it a point that we are able to sit as this committee to be able to discharge our work. I'm taking the opportunity to welcome you, in particular, to officially welcome. I wanted to be sure that he's connected now. Honorable Malazi and Honorable Bojani, who are the new representatives from the Democratic Alliance, who were introduced by Honorable Mbele last week, but they couldn't participate because of the formal processes that needed to happen. I am informed that all those have now been taken care of and they are now full members of this committee. Indeed, we look forward to your contribution to the committee. Of course, I must reemphasize the point I made as I welcome you, that we come from different political parties, but in the way this committee has operated, we see ourselves as the true representatives of the people as parliamentarians.
Recording in progress.
We may have come through in terms of lists, but South Africans have sent us to serve them. First and foremost. And for that reason, even on difficult questions that are before us, we do everything possible to find each other in the best interest of South Africans without changing identity that we have come through political parties. And I think that's what South Africans expect of us as we do our work, and I really look forward to your contribution in that regard. Of course, there'll be times when there may not be agreement on certain matters, but we do know when that happens, it's also really about the struggle to get the best possible solution to challenges before us in the best interest of the country and its people. So please feel welcomed. And I'm sure you'd clarify me also, because there's still a matter pending on appointments that need to happen as to who the whip of the party in the committee is, so that they can have that interaction immediately after the portfolio committee to try and arrange for the subcommittee work that needs to be completed on the appointment of the SABC vacancy, which we completed all processes except the deliberations and recommendation. The SABC, the MDDA board, as well as the CASA, and all these appointments are very important in ensuring stability of those institutions from a governance point of view, that at an operational level, they are properly guided to to deliver on their mandate. So I would, if I can get that indication, later on I would be able to make that contact. So please feel welcome, honorable members. So I thought I should start with that. Honorable members, of course, looking at the time and the fact that members may have to get to the house, I'll just, without waste of time, just dispense with the formalities. Of course, the way of reminder that for the smooth running of our meetings, all those that are on the platform, which is honorable members and all other participants, I just reminded once again in terms of rules on this platform that at all times ensure that your mic is muted and your video camera is switched off when you are not on the platform having been recognized by the chair to speak. Just make sure that at all times that's the case. This would also apply to situations where you may lose network or you are joining the meeting, that you ensure as you join that your mic is muted and your video camera is off, as the sensitivity of the mics can just bring in your background sounds, which may distract the speaker that may be on the platform. We are also reminded that anyone who would want to speak on any item that's on the table, including point of order, that a member may want to raise, you will raise your hand using your gadget. I'll be assisted by the committee support to really recognize your name in case I don't see it on my side. And only at that point, when you are recognized to speak, that you will then unmute your mic and switch on your video camera and then proceed to speak as recognized by the chair. Let's try and make it a point that when we participate on the platform, we do switch our video cameras on unless you are experiencing connectivity challenges. And that's cool. You'll be able to indicate that you are experiencing such, and in maximizing your bandwidth, you'd want to switch off the video camera would allow that to proceed. Otherwise, under normal circumstances, would really encourage all participants to ensure that their video cameras are on when they are taking a platform. I think having said that, as I said, it was really to remind members and all other participants who are participating would then be able to move smooth on that. Of course, I would take applications for leave of absence, which the secretariat would deal with that. Thereafter would then because I have confirmation that we have a quorum to proceed. So we'll take just for also for record who would have apologized for not coming to this meeting. Thereafter would then take the presentations. I know that there are presentations which would be led. Of course, the Deputy Minister will do an overview on that. But the item that relates to the committee report on what we considered for SITA will be dealt with by the committee. So that will then be separate from the guidance I'm going to give on the presentation. We will take the Deputy Minister, who will then do an overview, which then helps to also take the committee into confidence on any matter that would come through. In that way. We'll then give the department to then proceed with the presentation. Honorable Deputy Minister, after you have spoken will only be starting then to count the time that you are dedicating to the presentation. I know it looks like many items that you need to present. I'm taking advantage that you have been able to send this information through to members well in advance. And therefore, after the Deputy Minister would have spoken, would give 45 minutes to present on all the items that need to be presented, which means in that score, you'd really be getting to the main points that you want to highlight for the committee. And the committee members in their engagement will take into account the fact that they read the whole document, and their engagements will reflect as such. After the 45 minutes presentation, we'll then take engagements from members, and later on the committee, as it reflects, will then look at the adoption of the particular report on CETA that is before us. I hope that clarifies how we are going to proceed. So we'd want to create more time for the actual engagement than presentations which we have received and gone through. I hope that's clear. We'll now go to the committee support and check if there are applications for leave of absence or apologies received.
Morning, Chairperson. We have an apology for the minister who's currently overseas. And then just to inform you that Ms. Kubeka called to say that she will be connecting, but she'll just connect a little late. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ajara. Those are apologies received. And I take it that those would be agreed to. So that we then move to the next point. And as I said, the next point would be the Deputy Minister doing the overview and introducing the department in presenting on the BDM, on the SA Connect, on the consequences and all those items in 45 minutes after the Deputy Minister would have stopped. And then we'll take engagements thereof. Deputy Minister, as I welcome you on the platform, I'm sure you'll be ready to come in and you'll direct then how your presentation is going to come through in terms of. Thank you. Over to you, Deputy Minister. You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson Maneli. And good morning to all the honorable members on the platform. And welcome to the new members of the committee from the Democratic Alliance. I know that they might be new in the committee, but they are not new members of parliament. They've been around as colleagues in the national legislature. Let's welcome them as well. Chair, I'm leading a delegation of the department with the acting director general in attendance. I've seen a number of officials from the department and from the entities in our portfolio. I think the DG will introduce them appropriately when we take you through the presentations. Chair, you've requested us to talk to you about, I think, four items. We have prepared those presentations. It has been shared with the committee members. It's on the broadcasting digital migration as the first one. We will take you through an update on the SA Connect. We'll also update you on the 4IR implementation plan. And lastly, on the consequence management, both in the department and in the portfolio, as you requested, Chair. Just briefly, because the presentations are quite detailed, Chair, and I think members will be taken through the details. Just on the BDM, Chair, you recall that we came here after we have requested that we should brief you on the developments around the broadcasting digital migration. You allowed us to come and present to you. So what we are going to present is not new. It's something that we've shared with you, except that there is some developments with regards to that. You recall, Chair, that we did brief you that in August, September last year, the Cabinet approved a new approach in implementation of the broadcasting digital migration, which new approach was now focusing, taking a national approach instead of focusing on province by province. We recall that at some point, the Northwest and the Northern Cape and I think the Free State were identified as a pilot projects for the implementation. But later on, the Cabinet then took a view that that approach was not going to help in terms of progress. We're not going to meet the 31st of March this year as announced by the President. So the Minister led a process of reviewing that approach, which culminated in the Cabinet approving the new approach where we look at the rolling out this program nationally instead of doing it province by province. Okay, we're happy to announce that to date there has been a switch off of analog transmission in the five provinces of the Free State, which we started with, followed by the Northern Cape, the Northwest, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. So all these five provinces have been switched off. There is no analog transmission that is taking place in those provinces. As we speak now, the Sentech, which is the signal distributor, is in the process of restaking the frequencies in these provinces so that it can free up the frequencies for the purposes of the spectrum allocation. As you are aware that ICASA is in the process of releasing the spectrum through an auction, which is going to take place on the 8th of March. Chair, also to inform you that the Minister has gazetted the date of the 31st of March as a date by which the country would have completely switched off from analog transmission. The details of all of these things will be shared with yourself as we do the actual presentation. The project manager is also here, who's going to be taking us through this project, but we're here to share with the progress that we've made under the leadership of the minister. As a country, I think we are now finally can say that come the 31st of March, we will be moving completely off the analog transmission into the digital platforms. So it's quite an exciting development, Chair, as you know, that this program has been delaying since 2015. In fact, the first target was 2015. Now, 7 years later, we're delivering on this program. The second presentation, Chair, that we have prepared for you is on the SA Connect, which is going to be a new briefing that you will be receiving. We hope that do some sufficient progress so that when we come to present, at least there is some more progress on this score. But as you have requested, Chair, we have got no option but to oblige to come and brief you what the planning is in the department. Chair, you know that in December of 2013, Cabinet adopted the broadband policy, and therefore a project was conceived, Connect South Africa, which was called SA Connect. Initially, this was divided into two phases, simply because of the complexity and the scale of the project. The first phase was to be a pilot project, which was going to focus on connecting government facilities. And the second phase was to follow to connect the remaining facilities. To date, Chair, as part of phase one, almost about 800 or so government facilities have been connected as part of the phase one, which was led by CETA, Centec, and BBI. This was successfully concluded, Chair. The phase two, government decided that there has to be a feasibility study to look at the implementation of phase two. And this study was commissioned and it was led by the DBSA. The results of this study, Chair, estimated that the cost of rolling out phase two will be approximately in the region of 8 billion, which will be needed to connect the rest of South Africa. Now, as we received the report in August, as we came into the department, the minister was of the view that the cost was a bit exorbitant, and therefore she initiated a process to look at developing a new approach where the responsibilities to connect South Africa will be shared with the rest of the ICT industry. This approach was looked at. She put up a steering committee. Project managers were identified, were assigned the responsibility to work on the technical details of this new approach. And as you know, that cabinet around September or so, then approved this new approach of SA Connect. And we are going to share with you the details of this new approach that has been approved by cabinet to connect the rest of South Africa. Part of the approach is to look at the new licensing regime, which is part of the release of spectrum by ICASA. This has been looked at. ICASA has been engaged, and some of the key role players have been engaged to include as part of this new licensing regime the requirement for social obligations by the telcos to connect the remaining public facilities. As I've just said, that about 800 were connected by CETA, Centec, and BBI. So the remaining ones, which will include the schools, the clinics, and the tribal authorities, will then be connected as part of the social obligations through the licensing regime of ICASA. This has been negotiated as part of the licensing conditions, which will be finalized next month. And so CETA, BBI, and Centec will then continue to connect communities and households with internet connectivity. The details of this chair is in the presentation and will be shared with you. As I said, this new approach was approved by Cabinet around September. The two project managers are here. They will be sharing with us. It's quite an evolved process. It's at the level of planning, I must say, Chairperson, for now. As I was saying, that we had hoped that we'll have some enough time so that by the time we come to present to you, but the plan is there and the details will just be shared with you. The 4IR implementation plan, I don't want to get too much into it. As you know, that the president had appointed a presidential commission on 4IR. It's sitting, the president is the chair. The department is providing the support. We'll share with you the details of that, including the consultations that has been taking place. And lastly, on the consequence management, the DG and the officials will just share with you on what plans, what systems are put in place to ensure that there's consequence management and the number of audit findings that have been raised, what we have been attending to. And lastly, just to share with you about our view on the responsibility regarding consequence management in the entities, because you know that the board has got a fiduciary responsibility. It takes responsibility for consequence management, but there is a system that exists in which the board is held accountable by the department and the minister and the shareholder, and that will be shared with you. It's part of the presentation, Chair. I don't want to delay this. I know that the presentation are quite long and you have allocated a particular time. I hope that colleagues will present all these four presentations in the 45 minutes that has been allocated by the Chair. So from my side, Chair, that is the overview of the issues that you have requested us to come and present. If you do allow, I'm going to ask that the DG must introduce the team, and immediately we can go to BDM and ask the WOHO to take us through that, and then SA Connect and the rest of the other presentation. Thank you very much, Chairperson. If you allow, I can invite the DG. DG, are you here?
Yes, thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Honorable Chair and honorable members, a very good morning. My name is Nonkubela Jordan Kiani. Also, Chair, I would like to also congratulate the new members, and we look forward to our interesting and exciting engagements with them. Chair, just to indicate that present on the platform from the department as well as from our entities, we've got DDGs on the platform. We've got DDG Schellenberg, who is responsible for our SOC oversight. He will be doing part of the presentation on consequence management. We've got DDG Ngobeni, responsible for our ICT infrastructure program. He will take us through the SA Connect project. We've got DDG Manzini, who is in charge of corporate services. Due to the bereavement in the family, she is on the platform, but we've got Ms. Matope Tusi, Chief Director HR, who will deal with issues related to consequence management in the department. And we also have the DDG, Ms. Baggy, who is responsible for 4IR program. I also would like to recognize the project manager that the Deputy Minister made reference to, Mr. Debukula Shoppe. He's responsible as a project manager for the digital broadcasting migration, and he will take us through the presentation. We also have the chief directors responsible for the BDM on the platform, along with our colleagues in the Office of the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and our parliamentary liaison officers. I'd also like to recognize and greet the CEOs of the our entities. I've seen the CEO of SAPO on the platform, along with the colleagues from SAPO, and I also saw the CEO from Centec, along with the colleagues from Centec, and I also saw colleagues, officials from CETA. Without further delays, Honorable Chair, with your permission, I would like to take you through. My apologies, I also saw that we've got the CFO of the department. How can I forget Ms. Joy Amasimula, who holds then the kitty. With that, Chair, may I then please ask that we proceed. We have asked the colleagues that we limit our presentations to 7 minutes each. at the very most, then we'll just have an additional 2 minutes. So Mr. Tebogo Leshope will take us through the BDM presentation. May I then ask that if Zaytan could kindly assist us to Zaytan on Penit can assist us. Thank you very much. With that, Honorable Chair, may we then proceed with the first presentation, please?
Yes, please.
Thank you very much, ADG, Honorable Chair Manelli, Honorable Committee Members, DM, DG, good morning to all of you. Yes, as highlighted by the Deputy Minister and the DG, we are giving you an update. The last time we made a presentation on the model and then we gave you a status update as at that time. There has been some work performed, Chairperson, committee members. So today we just want to give you a status update as to how far are we from the main objective of the project. In terms of the purpose itself and the objective of the project, we highlighted to you, and this is just maybe another reminder that the project model announced sets the objective to terminate all analog television services by the end of March. We're also connecting indigent households to digital platform as a commitment that was made by the department and government of South Africa previously. Next slide, please. In terms of the key stakeholders and their roles and responsibilities, Chair, we highlight on this slide who the main participants and the drivers of the BDM project are. Starting with the department taking the overall project management responsibility and oversight on the performance and execution of the project. We have USASA on board, Chair. They are responsible for project funding. We have SAPO responsible for registrations of households and distributions of set-top boxes across the entire country, Chairperson. We also have Centec, who is responsible for set-top box installations across the country in all the provinces where we are and have been with this program. The SABC leads communications and awareness program. They are championing that. The strategy thereof is assigned to the SABC and the execution of it. We also have CETA Chair, who is helping us with the technology, the baseline technology that helps us in terms of data collection and registrations of the households. And the free-to-air broadcasters are also on board in the steering committee. And we have the commercial broadcasters, MultiChoice, Telkom, and Starset. As part of the steering committee that drives the project, resolves on issues and engage on the project progress made on the bi-weekly basis, Chair. The project, as we highlighted last time, Chairperson, is anchored around 5 pillars, the pillar of awareness, creation of awareness, the pillar of set-top box registrations, the pillar of actual set-top box installations, the pillar of actual analog switch-offs in the province, and then the aftermarket support, wherein after we have concluded the installation at a household, we want to ensure for a period of 12 to 24 months that that particular installation is supported and a household has access to support to ensure continuity of service. Still on that slide, please. So in terms of the engagements on creating awareness, we collaborate with the provincial government, district, and the local municipalities, Chairperson. This is necessary so that when we are on the ground, any issues that could relate to a particular region, we collaborate in terms of resolving. It has yielded positive results in the provinces that we have switched off and continue to do so in the other provinces where we are currently busy. So the KZN and Western Cape and the Eastern Cape are the provinces where we're currently busy. We're reporting to the committee that we have fully consulted and also with in collaboration with COCTA in preparation for the ACE. So the other provinces where we have concluded, we're also fully engaged, Chairperson. In terms of the other initiatives of awareness campaigns, Chair, we have various activities there in terms of scrolling texts. We have online messages on various entities of the portfolio of the departments, and the physical engagement on the ground via television and radio. So the messages are going out there, and the impact is on the ground. The people are aware about the program happening. They also have an alternative call center number where they can engage should they need a direct engagement. And then on the registration, indigent registrations, we have extended our capacity to also support the SAPO and the online STB registrations with fields interventions where we have the on-the-ground teams going house to house, also reminding people and registering indigent households on the ground. Will be quite visible in the current provinces now of the Western Cape, Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and KZN. We are done with the other five provinces. We also want to report to the committee that the online STB registration platform was launched officially, so you can access and a citizen can access the registration online, Chairperson. In terms of the appointment of the installers, we have national installers undertaking the responsibility of installing set-top boxes at household, Chairperson, and the physical installations are underway. And then the analog switch off. Since the last reporting, Chair, we switched off additional 42 transmitter sites, leading to a total of 155. When we engaged you last time, what I recall is that only the province of the Free State was switched off. Since then, Chairperson, we've switched off the Northern Cape, the Northwest, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo, coming to a total of five provinces of the nine already switched off. We're currently busy concurrently in the remaining provinces, targeting to have them switched off during March, with the first target date being the 11th. And then the second province being the 15th, the third province being the 18th, and then the third province, the fourth province being the 21st of March, Chairperson. The KZN, yes, thanks. The slides here present the progress in terms of analog switch off as at the 16th of February, Chairperson, looking at the SABC and ETV. So where we're showing the total number of sites, the number of sites that have been switched off, and then the provinces that are remaining, you will see that for the Free State, Northern Cape, Northwest, Malanga, and Limpopo, we have zeros because we have switched off. The remaining sites, as of the 16th of February, were 159. We have made progress. We've switched off some sites year to date on some of this. Remaining sites. From an ETV side, Chair, ETV is still lagging behind in terms of switching off a number of sites. There are some movements. We recorded at the last year in committee a commitment from ETV that they will start to switch off sites from March, which is a movement, an important movement from the last meeting where there wasn't talks of switching off sites, Chairperson. So ETV is still behind with 95 sites, with 91 sites of the 94, with only four having been switched off. And then in terms of the set-top box installation, the table gives the installations as at the 16th of February there. We've made also progress in other provinces where we are switching off, so the numbers will be different today compared to the to the 16th of March, Chairperson, 16th of February. And then in terms of the other issues, Chair, that we engaged on at the committee meeting, the issues we highlighted as the next activities that we were focusing on, we had intended to finalize and allocate delivery funding model with broadcasters. That has been finalized, Chair. What we're doing, we're still utilizing the state investment capacity of set-top boxes. As soon as we deplete that, we will then engage the broadcasters' capability there. We also had to finalize the engagement with National Treasury. We can report to the committee that that was finalized and the division was authorized by National Treasury. The aftermarket support was to be approved by the steering committee that has been approved, Chairperson. Centec is currently running with the call center where after the SABC will take over, Chairperson. And then the other issues in terms of critical success factors that we highlighted in the presentation, which we just also want to give an update on that. We wanted the National Treasury to approve so that we can proceed. That was concluded, Chair. The SLAs, 80% of the SLAs have been negotiated and they're concluded. Capacity of broadcasters and manufacturers, that has been settled, Chair, with the broadcasters. And then the set-top boxes, we have sufficient set-top boxes for all registered households. Also, manufacturers confirm that they have capacity to manufacture should the need rise above the number of registrations and requirements that we have, Chairperson. Next slide. Then on other availability and efficient distributions by SOEs, capacity both internally in the department and the SOEs has been augmented, Chairperson, wherever we see a need to level resources against the scope or the work that has to be done. We are just on that. The main focus in terms of the models and execution and performance, the results are positive at this stage. The main focus now is concluding on the remaining progress as a result of enhanced human capacity there. And then communications, we committed to strengthen that. It is being strengthened. We incorporate learnings on a daily basis in terms of what we meet on the ground. And the SABC with the department and other broadcasters is leading this particular initiative. And then the collaboration with provinces, districts, and local municipalities are touched on this issue. It is going very well, Chairperson. Next slide.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG.
Thank you very much. We'll then take the presentation on SA Connect, honorable members, and this will be led by DDG Gobeni.
Thank you, DG. I'm letting you the project on your side. Good morning, Chair and honorable members. I will take you through the SA Connect presentation. The Deputy Minister indicated SA Connect was adopted as a broadband policy for the country in 2013. And at that stage, it was established that the part that focused on government connectivity was quite huge in terms of scope, and also the financial resources required to implement it were quite significant. And then at that stage, it was decided that the program be split into two. In the phase one, which is the pilot, and also the phase two that focus on the remainder of the government facilities. And then on the other part of the SA Connect, government played a role of enabling the sector by through spectrum licensing and also ensuring that the relevant policy environment enabled investment in the sector. Since then, the phase one has been completed, which focuses on the 970 sites. It's just a map depicting The facilities are located in the 8 district municipalities. Next slide, please. We saw some other slide just depicting the site in the district municipalities, but here also showing that the facilities were either connected by DBI or CETA. CETA focused on upgrading existing sites that were connected but at a low speed and upgraded them to 10 megabit per second. While DBI focused on connecting new sites that didn't have connectivity before the phase one kicked in. Next slide. This also just focusing on the new sites that were connected, how they were split across the different provinces, but also indicating the types of facilities. The bulk of the facilities that were connected were schools, followed by the health facilities as well, and then a few government facilities and also two song centers. Next slide. This slide just shows what the department and the entities are doing just to make sure that we monitor that the connectivity that has been provided with these facilities continues to function. So at the technical level, the network checks whether there's connectivity to each and every site continuously on a 24-hour basis. And where the services is interrupted for various reasons, it could be either for power failure or it could be vandalism, or sometimes, particularly for schools, you find that because the schools do like to minimize the cost of electricity at the end of the school they switch off the electricity to the school, and this affects the equipment that's located in the schools. However, from a network point of view, we'll see that as schools that are not connected. But then what we do, we monitor how many of these facilities were connected throughout the month. And we have got the service level agreement that we've signed with both CETA and BBI. We have also signed similar agreements with the service providers that support them in the rollout. And the department enforces the service level agreement. So for example, in a month, a facility is not supposed to be off for more than 36 hours. If it's off for more than 36 hours, the department will not pay for that facility for the whole month. And then the entities apply the same to their service providers. This ensures that where there is a problem on connectivity, these issues are attended to urgently. In addition to this, what the department is doing now, because this is at a technical level, the department is conducting a physical visit to perform impact assessment of this connectivity to some of these sites. We've sampled some of the facilities across the country where we visit them and assess their usage and some of the challenges that they experience, and also how the connectivity has improved the use of connectivity in the delivery of service by the different facilities, whether it's school or health facilities, and also check whether the other requirements that they need, particularly find that they don't have sufficient devices, and those are things that we include in our engagements with the end user department. Next slide. Yeah, again, move beyond the slide, it's just a further breakdown of the slide that I just spoke about. Here we're talking about the problem statement for the new approach that was approved by cabinet. This just depicts connectivity throughout the country. This is a study that was done by IDC to determine the connectivity index. You'll see the green areas are areas where there's almost adequate connectivity, and it's mainly in the metros. As you move beyond those metros, you go to many of the rural districts, you find that the map tends to be too red, which means the connectivity there is not adequate. And there's a need for intervention by the state and also the sector. And that's what then is driving the implementation of the phase two approach. Next slide. So this is what cabinet are approving the main, just to summarize the module for the phase to implement the SA Connect as part of the phase two in the revised model. So the model really is based on the partnership between the state-owned entities and the industry, the sector players, which also includes emerging SMEs, like internet service providers. There are three streams to this plan. The first stream focuses on connecting schools, which makes up the bulk of the facilities, at about 18,000 schools, and then health facilities, about 3,800 of those, and then also with tribal authorities. This will be connected through the social obligations that have been included in the spectrum licensing process that ICASA intends to finalize before the end of March. So as part of that process, the licenses that will be successfully in being awarded spectrum will be allocated a number of facilities to provide connectivity to within a 3 month period. And that takes off a huge chunk of expense from the state that will be provided by the ICT sector. And then the second stream focuses on the role of the state digital infrastructure company, which is made up of Centec and BBI. And that will also then tap into the, and also enable the ICT sector, particularly the ISPs and the emerging SMEs in the ICT sector, so that when Centec and BBI provide open access base stations, the sector then leverages on that to provide household connectivity and community connectivity through Wi-Fi and different types of technologies, including satellite technology. And then the last stream, it's the stream that's led by CETA, which focuses on government connectivity. So that's the role that CETA currently plays, to provide connectivity to government offices. What has been changed from the phase one is that the schools and the experts have been removed from that role. And then CETA focuses on providing a connectivity to government, and then working in close collaboration with the different government departments. Next slide. I think the slide just also attempts to provide the detail that I just provided above, to show that the aim is that within a 3 month, a 3 year period, 36 months, the connectivity to households and communities will be concluded. Also the connectivity to schools and facilities will be concluded through the engagement with the sector as well. Can move to the next slide. So I think the fundamental thing is that that was adopted by cabinet, that the state will play a critical role in ensuring that the broadband expansion to households, and this aims to achieve the 80% access to internet, which also addresses the infrastructure part, but it's also the skills and the devices issues that also need to be addressed as part of that, to ensure that people have got access to internet in a meaningful way. Furthermore, because there are other non-ICT state-owned companies like Transnet and Eskom who have extensive infrastructure, ICT infrastructure for their own operation, but because they offer spare capacity in those networks, the state cabinet has approved that it should be collaboration between BBI, Centec, and those non-ICT SOEs to leverage on that existing infrastructure, so that we're able to expedite the rollout and also reduce the cost to provide connectivity to these communities that are currently not having sufficient or adequate broadband access. And next slide. You can move to the next slide. So this diagram shows just depicted what I just explained in terms of those three streams, it requires close collaboration between the state or the public sector, ICT players, and also the private sector players, because we need each other, you know, so that we minimize the duplication of infrastructure and also reduce the cost of deployment and expedite the rollout. And the top part just shows the CETA Lake, where CETA also, in implementing connectivity development, also relies on the private sector to provide the last mile. Meanwhile, CETA's responsibility and core strength is to ensure that government information is protected, and also this efficiency in terms of how to access such infrastructure. And this is a table just depicting the breakdown of the facilities across the different provinces and across the different sectors or types of facilities. You can move to the next slide. In terms of the financial implications, the portion that focuses on providing community connectivity is estimated to be 2.5 billion over a 36-month period. There are engagements that are underway. The department continues to engage with the National Treasury to look at financing this rollout. And with regard to the CETA portion, CETA is going to be working with the government departments where they use their existing budget for ICTs to then either upgrade existing connectivity where that connectivity is not adequate, or provide connectivity to new government facilities. You move to the next slide. This is just a high-level rollout plan to implement this revised approach to ensure that we, within the three-year period, we're able to achieve quite a significant challenge. But I think with all the players coming together and, you know, and also ensuring that we provide the necessary support, we should be able to aim towards achieving this huge feat. So CETA will focus on the upgrade in the first 3 years. And the bulk of the first year is really just to ensure that whatever programs that CETA has undertaken with the government department is expedited. There'll be a few new connectivity, particularly to Tucson centers and libraries. And then we'll scale that up in the following year. Similarly with the SDIC and the ICT sector, we will increase the connectivity to communities, but also even on the service level obligation, from the first year to the second year, there will be a huge increase in terms of that connectivity. We believe by that second year, most of the networks will be in place to ensure that those facilities are connected. So the first year is likely to make sure that the baseline infrastructure is put in place, and then we expect that rollout in the subsequent years. And next slide. This just also emphasizes the point in terms of the how to leverage existing infrastructure that's available to reduce the cost, and particularly the collaboration between the ICT and non-ICT state-owned enterprises led by CERNTEC, CETA, and also DBI as well. So that the collaboration will ensure that we've got a national broadband infrastructure contributed by the likes of Sunrail, Prasa, Transnet, and Eskom. Would we have their own infrastructure? So we look at how do we leverage that to minimize duplication in the main. You can move to the next slide. This just shows that the ones that need this national broadband network, which is going to be made up of multiplicity of players, both in the public and private sector players, we still have to have the capability to monitor the services that are provided to the different facilities. This ensures that we proactively attend to network issues that arise, and also ensure that we meet the service level agreement, considering that some of the services will be provided to institutions where they will be quite needed, particularly in the health their requirements are quite stringent, particularly as they move to digitization. You know, so that if they want to access patient digital records, it should be available urgently. So you can't have a situation where, you know, you don't have adequate capacity to provide access to such critical records. So this network monitoring capability will assist us in doing that. Lastly, I think in terms of the progress where we are today, we are continuing the engagement with the provinces and the relevant departments, and also engagement with Treasury are underway. We have engaged with the ICASA as well to start looking at how this site that will be connected as part of the spectrum licensing should be allocated as input. We are also working on finalizing the repeat deployment policy, which is crucial for both the public and private sector to enable quick rollout of infrastructure. And also we're working on a proposal to look at how do we consolidate the budget of the state focusing on ICT to ensure that we efficiently use those limited resources to maximize the impact of the connectivity. And also the engagement with the non-ICT stakeholders are also in progress. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DDG. Honorable members and chair, we'll now move to the third presentation on the 4IR strategic implementation plan to just appraise you and give you an update. And this will be led by DDG Bagge.
Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning, members. Good morning, Deputy Minister. And good morning, DG and colleagues on the platform, CEOs of the entities. Let me tell myself, my presentation is not that long. It will only take less than 8 minutes. And I will ask the person that pushing the presentation to actually skip some of the slides. So my focus will be on 1, 2, 6, 7, and 8. I think this slide, the Deputy Minister has already covered on it, just that what has happened and why was the fourth Industrial Revolution Commission created. Just as a reminder, the Commission itself came up with this definition that you see on the first bullet. So South Africa has its own definition of what is the fourth Industrial Revolution. So you'll see here it says it's an era where people are using smart, connected and converged cyber physical biological systems and smart business models to define and reshape the social, economic and political spheres. So the other ones I'm going to skip, and if you could please go to slide 2. So here we are just showing the progress that has been made to date in terms of the consultative process, just to show that the report on the PC4IR was gazetted in October 2020. And after it was gazetted, we were responsible as the team to ensure that we develop a strategic implementation plan. And we started a process of consultation in October 2020, because we already had the draft report earlier in April. So we did go through it in government as a start. We consulted the economic cluster of the DGs, and we went to the Foresight Manco in October, in November 2020. Then we also tabled it at the ministerial cluster for economic cluster as well. So after that, we were given comments, and we were given a go ahead to commence with our consultations. So the better part of 2021, we focused on making sure that we dealt with industry consultation. We first started with CDT itself and its own entities such as the Centec that you see here, South African Post Office, you name it. And then we moved to the DPME. This was very important for us because we did not want to duplicate some of the efforts insofar as the monitoring and evaluation. We met with a number of stakeholders even there. We moved to all national government departments, went to all provinces as well, as we also met with SALGA, and we met with private sector players. When I say private sector, I don't only mean our sector. I also mean people from the trucking industry, people from the pharmaceuticals, people from the banking. We received inputs from them. We had workshops with them throughout that period that you see in 2021. Where that same period, we analyzed the feedback that we received, and we actually then, once we finalized it, we submitted the final draft in October, and we after that we just it went through our internal processes on the terms of the strategic implementation plan in November 2021. Just to note that moving forward for this quarter, we are focusing on making sure that the strategic implementation plan is receives approval, and we also focus on the monitoring and evaluation of the key activities. I will ask you to move to, slide, maybe the one before this one, just as a precursor. Yes, so here, this is just a methodology that was used, and this methodology we shared with everyone that we consulted with, and we just, it shows which projects are required to be done in order for the PC4IR recommendations to be successful. So we actually outlined each and every program and project, and as what is it that needs to be done, medium term, short term, and long term. Next slide, please. So here you will see that these are the strategic priorities in terms of the SIP, as we call it. So you'll hear, you'll see here that we are looking as to what are the things that have required. So you'll see we have a vision that we have put in terms of what is our aspiration in so far for South Africa in so far as 4IR. And then we were also showing that because we are responsible to ensure that the projects that have been identified are implemented. So we have developed what is called the strategic implementation plan. And then one of the key important pillars there is the government digitization that is driven by CETA. This is so important for us to realize the fourth industrial revolution as South Africa, because without government being digitized, then we are bound to fail. Then you will see that we also have, you'll see that we have the 4IR enabling and sustainability precursor. Here we're talking about the laws that need to be changed. And you see also as well, I discussed it, the regulations that need to make it easy for innovators and people that want to invest in the fourth industrial revolution that need to be changed. I think in recent times, you would have seen that some of the laws are being challenged because they're still archaic and are not creating a favorable environment. Then on the digital infrastructure, you will note that this is linked as well to what is happening, the SA Connect that Dinyiko was talking about, as well as the licensing of the high demand spectrum. Here, we are saying that there is no point in talking 4IR without us ensuring that there is an infrastructure that is capable of supporting such initiatives that people may come up with. Then here on human capital, you will see here our main issue that we said, the main foundation, one of the foundations that is required is to make sure that people are skilled from a the 4IR required skills as to what is required in the future. I think I was at this committee when I mentioned that, so for example, the jobs of the future, how do we as South Africans prepare for that? There's work that is done beautifully by NEMISA in order to prepare the workforce, both of government and also the youth of South Africa. So you see here, we have up until the ninth priority, which is coordination, engagement, and monitoring. This is the most important thing, because you would note that the report on the Presidential Commission on 4IR talks to lack of coordination and lack of monitoring of projects. that projects are happening nonstop and there is no end date in sight. So these are the priorities that we have linked up in terms of the document that we have developed. You will see at the pillar of it is economic growth and making sure that we are skilled. So this is the summary of the slide that I just did, that in the main, that you will see that we have to focus on digital skills. We have to make sure that we have regulation and digital infrastructure. Then you will move to the eighth slide. I know I have 2 more minutes. Just this is the last slide, Chairperson. Here, we're just saying these are the key recommendations that came from the PC4R report. And what is it that as the DCDT we're doing about it? So for example, the first one, investment in human capital, we have the National Digital and Future Skills Strategy, which needs to be, which also is linked to alignment skills and job initiative programs. We have the establishment of an AI institute. Here we target that in this quarter one of 2022-2023. We'll finalize the terms of reference for the launch of the AI Institute, which will be launched with the University of Johannesburg. So also we are leading in the development of the AI blueprint for Africa and Africa for IR strategy. And then there's this big one called SADC Big Data Framework. We are both the chair and scribe in this one. We are leading these projects with SADC and AU. You'll note, Chair, then the third one that we talk about is establishment of a platform for advanced manufacturing. So here there's a digital portal to profile local innovative products. That is program that the department is spearheading. Then you see, Chair, that there is incentives for future industries, platforms, and applications of YR. Here, this is the acceleration of the digital infrastructure that I spoke about, rapid deployment guidelines that are required, broadband in connectivity, cloud infrastructure, you name it. So we are required to build YR infrastructure. This is to make sure that the acceleration of spectrum policy and 5G and to 5G and beyond, reaffirming of 2G and 3G spectrum, broadcasting digital migration. Then we have the review of pre-policy and or legislation. Here, Chair, we did an agile policy review. You note that there is a need to replace the ECA. The future of broadcasting, I'm sure it has come to this committee. You would have seen the audio and audiovisual, a policy that is being discussed within the department with its internal stakeholders. And then you see here, we said the establishment of YR Science Implementation Coordination Council. This, we are saying, it is something that we are doing internally because of funding concerns, and we are just making sure that there is coordination within within government, and we keep sharing what we're doing, and especially within the economic cluster, to see how we can leverage on the work that has been done elsewhere. With that, Chairperson, I'm sorry to have over use more time by 2 minutes. With that, I thank you.
Thank you very much, DDG Baggy. Our last presentation, Chair and honorable members, it is on the consequence management. I'm going to ask Ms. Tusi as well as DDG Shalembe to take us through. DDG Shalembe will present the parts related to our entities, and Ms. Tusi will present what we're doing in the department.
Thank you. Thank you, DJ. Thank you, Chair, honorable members, Deputy Minister, and the colleagues. I will start, as the ADG has indicated, with the protocols that we follow in the department in terms of consequence management. And in our introduction, we just indicating that we endeavor to maintain a zero tolerance approach to fraud, corrupt activities, and acts of dishonesty, and that we also commit that deliberate and the employees or who negligently ignore their duties and disobey legislation will face accountability and consequence management. And In the department, we also want to indicate in the introduction that consequence management is being implemented in line with the legislative framework that is in the public service. It's on the legislative framework has been outlined in slide 2. And we, based on the request from the different governance structures in the department, we have been requested to consolidate a consequence management guide or procedure document. And we are in the process of finalizing that document. We have already started that work. It's at and the legislative framework, Chairperson, I think it's outlined there, but the most critical one that we normally use frequently is at number 10, the PSCBC Resolution 1 of 2003 and the Chapter 7 of the SMS handbook, because it gives us the protocols and the procedures of disciplining, because the Resolution 1 of 2003 is the disciplinary code and procedure for the public service. So these are the processes that we follow, Chairperson. Without going into detail, we have formal and informal processes that we follow in consequence management. The informal one is where the supervisor and the manager follows when they have less serious cases that they must deal with in their own unit, where they will end up in those consequence management, counseling, verbal warnings. And we also have formal processes where the cases are serious and they are reported formally they go through investigation through our employee relations unit. And we also have the processes of precautionary suspension in cases where the case, the misconduct or the offense that has been committed is of a serious nature, and it is felt that the presence of an employee in the workplace might jeopardize the investigation. So the precautionary suspension has to be 30 days, and it's only the chairperson of the disciplinary hearing that is allowed to extend that period. So the acting DG, with the assistance of HR or employee relations, is expected to monitor the precautionary suspensions, because you must remember that employees that are on precautionary suspension are still getting paid, so that we ensure that they don't perpetually remain on suspension. And such is reported to the DPSA monthly, because the DPSA is also worried about the number of public servants that are on precautionary suspension. But we can report, Chair, that in the department we currently do not have any employee who is on precautionary suspension. And the allegations of financial misconduct, we just wanted to highlight them, Chairperson, that we also follow the same process, but we also here have to adhere to the PSMA and the Treasury regulations in terms of taking action in cases of financial misconduct. And these cases, Chair, are supposed to be reported to, and they are also supposed to be finalized within reasonable time. And we report them to the DPSA, and we report them to the Public Service Commission on a quarterly basis. And the process is the same as the one that we follow in terms of the disciplinary code, in terms of taking action. And the acts of the unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, Chair, are also addressed in line with the PFMA, because here it will be in cases where the PFMA has been contravened. It's expected that the managers, the employees, will report these cases in terms also with the whistleblowing policy. These cases, they also serve, we have the loss control committee in the department that assists the DG in terms of assessing the amount of loss that each damage or the theft that has happened. And they recommend to the Director General, who will write to the employee who has committed this act, if the employee is found to be liable in terms of the amounts that must be paid. There is a process there, Chair, because employees also are given an opportunity to say the department has found you that you are liable for this and you have to pay, and they have to agree in writing that we can do that. And in cases of theft and losses, Committee can, which is always confused as the double jeopardy, but it's according to the laws that are supposed to be implemented. And the cases that were dealt with, Chairperson, because we were requested to report on the 2020-21 cases that served before the Loss Control Committee are these ones where the employees were found liable and currently paying their debts. So these are the cases that served there. Other cases that served there, we did not include all of them, but these ones were finalized in this financial. And you can move to the next slide. Or in terms of the audit findings, Chairperson, these are the audit findings and the audit findings register that we have and that we are implementing that from the AGSA. We have 28 total, the total number of findings is 28. And 14 of these findings are in progress, and 14 of these findings are resolved. And the details it's more on the vacant positions that are not filled within 12 months, Chairperson. And as the committee will know, that the department has been reviewing the organizational structure, and we have not been able to fill these positions. But as soon as that process is finalized, the process will start of filling positions. The other one is about the late capturing of leave, which is also a problem because we had to revert to the manual leave system when our e-leave contract came to an end. And we are now unable to do anything because of the IMSS process that is handled by National Treasury to ensure that we digitize our leave processes again, because it was a bit easier when we have a digitized or electronic leave system. And the other findings are about the old irregular expenditure cases where the investigations have now been concluded, Chair, and the report has been finalized and National Treasury is being engaged in these cases. And the cases that will need consequence management will be handled as such. And the last one is on the development of policies, because when we have just merged, Chair, we had to go through a process of merging the policies from the two departments and go through the processes of consultations with the unions. But most of the policies have now been concluded and approved by the acting DG, they are being implemented. The other ones that are still outstanding is not a lot, but we are at advanced stages of consultations with the unions. I believe that will be the end of the department. Yeah. Thank you
very much, Ms. Tusi. I'll hand over to DDG Shalembe. This is our last presentation, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG, and good morning to the chairperson of the committee, the honorable members, the DM, and the rest of the colleagues on the platform. I will be quickly taking through the committee through the consequence management framework for entities in our portfolio. We start off by saying the accountability chain of SOEs is multi-level. It involves SOE management, boards, executive authority, and ultimately parliament. Each of these oversight bodies fulfill different oversight functions in accordance with their specific responsibilities. For instance, management, particularly EXCO in an SOE, is delegated by the board to run the day-to-day operations of the entity. But the law says, in as much as the board may delegate this function or these responsibilities, the board is, however, not divested of its fiduciary responsibilities. The board remains the accounting authority. and should take all the responsibility for consequence management in the end. In our department, the SOE Oversight Branch, which I lead, assists the minister to provide oversight in her capacity as the shareholder representative of the state, what the law refers to as the executive authority. We then say there are several areas where issues of consequence management may arise. And these include the lack of poor performance, governance lapses, and the audit findings. Thank you very much. With respect to monitoring of performance and the corrective action thereof, Treasury Regulation 30.2.1 requires accounting authorities, that is the board, to report quarterly to the executive authority, and the same reporting is made to Parliament. In the department, we analyze these reports and brief the minister on the performance of each entity. And identified areas of poor performance are reported to the minister. The minister then holds each board accountable for poor performance in the form of the feedback to each underperforming entity and makes recommendations for corrective action. We then, in the department, monitor the implementation of the recommendations for corrective action and reports on progress in the subsequent quarter to the minister. Next slide. On governance and audit findings, again, the department monitors the resolution of audit findings, both internal and external audits, through the submission of audit action plans by each entity to the department. Boards are advised accordingly to take firm action to prevent irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. And it is emphasized that once incurred, the board needs to institute corrective action, which includes institution of disciplinary action and recovery, or investigation first, institution of disciplinary action and recovery of funds from responsible officials. Prevention of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure includes mostly capacitation of the SCM function, as well as bolstering the internal controls in each entity. Each entity also has policies approved by the board that spells out the procedures for consequence management. Next slide. How is this then conducted? The department executes its oversight responsibility over SOEs through shareholder compacts and governance agreements. In these documents, with regards to governance, consequence management is provided for through one, provisions or clauses that make it mandatory for SOE boards to proactively monitor action plans to implement Auditor General and internal audit recommendations and effectively address audit findings and unauthorized fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There are also clauses that make it mandatory for SOE boards to enter into annual performance contracts with CEOs. And each CEO is then required in turn to enter into contracts with CFOs and COOs, and these contracts are then cascaded down to the lowest level. And it is expected of the board then to monitor the performance according to these contracts. So, sorry, just to put the slide, a sentence or two there, thank you. So the department then monitors the implementation of the above quarterly commitments, except for performance contracts, which are monitored annually. It then makes a recommendation to the board to improve where implementation is not satisfactory. And the governing documents, amongst others, also require the board to perform an annual evaluation of its performance in terms of its effectiveness, both collectively and individually. Next slide. This is the last slide where we are basically showing as an example, a dashboard of how we monitor and follow up on the audit findings of each entity. We've listed all the entities there and the number of audit findings, the number of findings resolved and those unresolved. And the last column is the percentage of the findings resolved. These are then followed up in all our engagements with entities at regular intervals, at least once a quarter. And we get updates on what each entity has done, one, to resolve the findings, but two, also the update on what is happening with respect to consequence management insofar as investigation, disciplinary actions, and ultimately recovery of funds lost. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think this is the last slide. Thanks a lot.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much, DBG. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, that then concludes the presentation from the Department. I'll hand back to the Deputy Minister and to you, Chair. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair, and thanks to the Acting DG and all the DDGs for the presentation and the Chief Director. Chair, that is all from our side. We are ready to receive the questions if members do have. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister and the team for the presentation. Honorable members, that's the presentation. I will now take hands for engagement of the presentations. Hajira, you'll also assist me in taking up hands that I may not see on my side.
Yes, Chairperson.
Yes. Can I then recognize hands from members? If you have a challenge of raising the hand from the gadget, just indicate if you want to speak so that we note that you may be struggling with that. On my side, I don't.
Nothing on my side, Chair.
Okay. I take it that it means the members would be satisfied with the feedback they've received. I have a few points, though, to raise. I think the presentation is good, I must say. Especially with the BDM, where there is once again reassurance that we'll be able to meet the deadlines that we have set. I think that's important because this committee has made this clear that would really not want to be part of the steps, Deputy Minister. That this would have been going on for some time, putting timelines, they changed. So I'm happy that that's the case. What people can be able to raise queries and so on, post installations and so on, which was something we were worried about with the problems that were experienced in the first installations. But you may want to clarify the most important question in my view. that yes, from CENTEC it will be SAPC, but that's more of, unless you want to clarify that, you were still talking to the post-installation process. But the reality is that, which is acknowledged by yourselves, technology as it advances, that you had would also get to be obsolete. And this is the question we have asked about the set-top boxes for some time now. Given that the people that you are targeting from a point of government subsidy, so I'm not talking about those that are the unsubsidized market, these would be in the main your indigent people. What is the plan post the obsolete period of that technology? Because you have to ensure that at all times they have access to broadcasting services, especially with more channels that are coming. Very good thing there that the democratic government is bringing more compared to the few channels they were restricted to during apartheid times. So if there's anything big that the government is also doing with this program, it's really to also ensure that even in the free-to-air, there are more channels that people will be having access to. But post the obsolete stage, we will then need to still say what is the plan there. Is the SABC CENTEC will hand over to them just about the queries or customer service, so to say, other than this point. So that if this point is not taken care of, then the question would be from a point of planning and budgeting, what's there? Because at least there would be estimation based on the ability of what you put, that at a particular time it will be obsolete. Would we be ready to still keep those that may be indigent at the time? Because not all of them may have gone out of indigence, but there may still be some indigence at the time, how you seek to address those. I see that Honorable Dr. Basop would also want to make a comment. Over to you. You are recognized, Honorable Basop.
Thank you, Chairperson, the Deputy Minister, Acting DG, and the colleagues. Really, there isn't much to comment on these projects, but mine is just a comment on the BDM, SA Connect, as well as 4IR project. What is not coming clearly here in terms of a consultation, Chair, is the issue of labor. I so wish that the department should take us into confidence that in the whole processes, labor was taken on board. We know very well, Chair, that that sector is very much problematic in terms of the processes of transformation. Then the last point, Chair, is around the implementation and the monitoring of the same three projects that I've mentioned, that what needed to be strengthened by EE department is the working relations with EE students as the monitoring of these projects. In the interest, Chair, of strengthening the whole question, yet district development model, which was launched by President some times ago, perhaps the Deputy Minister, though it's not in their mandate, the strengthening and revival of the war rooms, perhaps at a political level, those structures need to be revived, because they, in my view, they can assist a great deal in as far as the question of monitoring of the implementation of these projects, so as to avoid whatever challenges that they may come up from the communities. Because attendance from these communities, especially when we're approaching the elections, they will come up to say, we know nothing about this and that and that. And if we can strengthen at that level to ensure that our communities are taken on board, indeed, we won't experience any protests. I think briefly, Chair, those are the comments that I wanted to make on this presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
I take it that the Deputy Minister and the team would have noted those points, Honorable Dr. Basso. I just wanted to check if I'm leaving any member so that I then complete my questions, and then we have just maybe one response, Deputy Minister, if you don't mind. Ajira, is there any member that I may be leaving out like it has happened just now?
Nothing on my side, Chair.
Okay. Yes, maybe just to then proceed on that point that I was raising. I'm sure you'd have understood it's about giving the guarantee to South Africans that we do take into account this thing that they are to have this access because of a government intervention. And a few years down the line, we may be faced with this situation of obsolete technology. What's the plan there? But maybe the other thing it's really on, I think I wanted to raise that point differently, but talk to the SMMEs that in previous reports would have been disruptive because of the grievances they had. And amongst those would be even the pricing, the market price versus what the state is able to provide, on whether those now have been overcome so that we do not have people who come up as business forums as you get to the other provinces to stall processes and site engagement and pricing as an issue. So I'm just saying I'm raising it in that way, because it was also reported as part of the delay when we're starting, whether now systems are in place to ensure inclusivity, and that those questions are addressed. That will be on the BDM side. I think on the SA Connect, I think it's good to really move beyond just the connection of government institutions and look at getting South Africans broadly. And this is an area that has been identified also in the economic recovery and construction plan. Now, I just want to check again, Deputy Minister, on this. That part of the problem would be sometimes underspending on budgets that go this route and end up getting budget cuts and then get redirected. And I think we would now know that the implications of that is to leave other areas still having connectivity challenges. That's the real impact on people's lives. When you really want to get them on board. And I'm raising this because there's been, again, probably an additional 200 million, which is also directed to SA Connect, of course, targeting the youth, bringing the youth on board, and so forth. Just to check whether the plan that is in place would help us also ensure that the spending, including additional resources that have been asked for. Second point is on ownership of the infrastructure. That initially the approach to broadband and so on will be to get emerging SMMEs coming on board, fund some of these programs, but it gets to be a problem sometimes on how that partnership gets structured to a point that you'd feel that government has put up the infrastructure, but it doesn't own it. It has to negotiate with people that they're funded. How is that addressed in the new plan? I think that's important. And for me, then that's linked to what you're trying to do by putting together Centec and BBI as one infrastructure company that we are putting up as the state. That if you are able to bring all these other players, which are state-owned enterprises, is that coming together or collaboration also taking us to a point where that we envisage as the infrastructure company taking care of this, so that you avoid duplications and so on. But of course, this would have also brought unnecessary competition problems for even BBI, I'm saying from a point of race and so on. So if you can also speak to that, that would be helpful. On the 4IR, not really many questions there. Just that my take is you are still giving us what you would want to see happening. And I think from where one is, just from a point of implementation plan, it would help that once you have defined how you look at projects, how you assess them, how the monitoring would be done, but at some point you are able to say these are the projects we are talking to that are as a result of the outcomes of the 4IR commission. So that we know that beyond that point there is now implementation, right? Of course, where there are legislative matters, we would understand it, that it would need the legislators to really amend the law and so on. But maybe there are those that could still happen without waiting for that, because the current may still be enabling that you get to see implementation of some of those projects, right? So that as we look at the projects that get implemented, we'd be able to say whether it's really about realizing what we set ourselves for. So that will be one. Maybe the other issue you may want to clarify, because it's good that you are not just talking about the CDT, but the consultation broadly included looking at other sectors of the economic cluster. And in this call, I'm sure would also be concerned even about just the wording used, where others will take it from a point of maybe even conceptualization, maybe an issue here. You are looking at human capacity. Of course, you look at strategies that you've put, but that's saying 4.0. Then you have the part on the industry, and I'm sure there will be some alignment when you look at the chapter that looks at industry. That one time it's 5.0, here it's 4.0, and then you put government at 5.0. I'm just saying that it may look just quite small. But for others, it may be about how we are moving in an advanced way, you know. For example, you'll talk 5G elsewhere, but elsewhere they may be talking 6G already. So how do we keep up with the pace of what industry is looking at, so that the skills that we also produce do take us elsewhere. Of course, learning from what we did earlier when we're dealing with infrastructure, right? Where you would want to fast track infrastructure, but then put from the ask such a situation. And then after that, you don't get to know how those skills would have been sustained with the changing environment, or on whether we are producing people to be taken out of the country, or it's people that can still keep the country sustained. So I'm just saying, for me, you may need to clarify those differences when you're talking about the same thing from the same document, so to say. So if you can, as I say, if I can be clarified on those as it relates to 4IR, that would help implementation, but as well as just conceptualization and how people may interpret what you put if it's just a wording problem. The last point would be on the part about consequence. Again, the background is more to, I think, clarify, which is important to do that. Clarify us what the law provides, who plays which role, which is very important, so that we also do not think, for example, in entities, that as parliament we all of a sudden become board members and want to deal with operations that boards are appointed to deal with, and that we need to play oversight over them. I think that's understandable. But with the performance of the entities and some of the things that were reported to us, for example, I want to make a practical example. USASA has not performed well. That's why we are in the situation we're in now. And we had to put steering committees to try and get almost everybody around, because that vehicle may not be what we are looking at. But they will also raise what could be the problems. In a situation where you have suspended people and they have small resources, then it means your supply chain issues would not move, right? I think the expectation in my side, Deputy Minister, would be on whether those would have been addressed or they are still pending issues. So that I don't have to drill on the report on what do you mean by the unresolved ones. Because it may be 10 and then resolved is 8. But the two that's unresolved is the reason why we are not having any movement, right? So the committee then needs to be taken into confidence. Of course, we understand the implications of private information and so on. That's not the interest, but at least we should be knowing the areas like the other one presented by the department. Okay, you have theft that happens there, and this is what we are dealing, how we are dealing with it. So that's what you would need. So that if this matter comes back again from the Auditor General, we must say in here at least we have been keeping our eye on the actions that get taken, whether they are getting to finality or not. And we do know, though, that that decision to suspect also had implications in terms of how you were processing your suppliers to the program, because you also needed to investigate whether that is presented to yourselves is authentic, which is important in the fight against corruption. But even those would need to get feedback that those matters have now been cleared, and we can confirm without fear of contradiction that we pay for is that we received, and not for things that have not been received nor used, right? And therefore, Deputy Minister, what is then the plan on USASA such that we will not have this again? right, happening. So I'm just saying for us, we need that. It's part of what will give confidence to the oversight role that we need to play. That matters we have dealt with, we can't get specific feedback, not just general numbers. And in that score, we'll know if we are making progress or not, but also would know whether the entity as it stands still serves the purpose and what could be done to still service the South Africans on what they were to do and they can do. So these are points I wanted to make so that when you respond, you can respond to all of them. I'll hand over to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. I think I will ask the officials to first respond. So we'll start with the BDM. Who will respond to the specific questions that have been raised. The others, I'll come and deal with them later. And there is also a question for, I think you say Connect 4IR, and then the DG will deal with consequence management, and I will come back and sort of wrap up. I think if we can start with the
apologies, if I may proceed, owing to the request for the singular, and I'll hand over then to also invite Ms. Lechope as well as DDG Shalembe on the SOC. So let me thank first the chair as well as the honorable member Basoko for the questions. Chair, with regards to the post-installation switch off, and also in terms of the concern, rightfully so, on the technology absolute, I just want to give them the assurance, Chair, that we have looked into this. And with regards to the decoders, yes, we know that they keep on evolving. But what we are intending on doing is to really invest on the SMMEs in as far as creating a new sector within society, especially a local one, with the indigenous people in terms of installer as well as refurbishment program. So while we do have the installers in place, and therefore we're saying that these decoders, we can use certain components over time and we can also modernize it. You would note, honorable members, that during the SONA debate, the honorable minister alluded to the fact that we are also going to introduce a new program with regards to data capturers. And I mean, sorry, with regards to the data to the households. And we want to use smart devices in as far as then ensuring that the data is available in the households. Whilst this program is still being packed further, but we've identified that these decoders that we'll be deploying, both from government as well as also those from our sector partners, we want to ensure that we would have over time an inbuilt mechanisms within the decoders themselves that they would then be able to ensure Wi-Fi coverage in the household as well as within the communities. So these installers and the refurbishment, now coming to the question by Honorable Basoku, we are actually intending to really invest in them, and we will train them over time, the installers. One, because we appreciate the fact that when we recruited them, we were very deliberate as a department to ensure, sorry, Chair, there's some of Mr. Shop, if you could kindly mute. We were very deliberate as a department to ensure that we do the recruitment at a local government level, municipalities, because we want to set up this refurbishment, or whether you call it computer technology refurbishment centers in each community, so that the communities around that particular area would not have to suffer and would not have to travel distances when then they encounter challenges with their devices. whichever one. This will also assist in the area of job creation, as you would know that in our country we're grappling with the issue of job creation, especially in terms of the youth as well. And part of this then to actually to look at that, we will be introducing another new program in the department in the new financial year on the data captures in as far as recruiting unemployed graduates in the ICT sector in this regard. So these particular decoders, Chair, as you said, we are intending then to modernize them as time goes. And then also what we've also introduced is that we, as we're deploying and as we're encouraging citizens, we also said they can actually go and look at your smart televisions or what we call the IDTVs, which are available within the market. And we've also prescribed to say the ones that have got a gold digital logo in their retail centers, they are the ones that we've certified that they've got the inbuilt technologies to be able then to transmit digital content. And then also I would like to add that we are working with the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, and the minister will be gazetting a notice in terms of stopping the import of analog televisions in the country as well as the sales thereof. And this is going to be immediate by June, that we want to make sure that there is no more import, because we do not want our citizens, as then we are migrating, to run to the shops, honorable members, and then they are unfortunately crooked in terms of buying old, as you said, absolute or near absolute technologies. And we would want to make sure that we have then the proper technologies for that. So that gazette, working in partnership with DTIC, will then be issued in terms of the notice. Then adding on to the building on our ecosystem within the broadcasting. And I think in our presentation, we alluded, DDG Bagi alluded to then say what part of our future broadcasting program is then to say Centec, and I'll ask this for Mr. Shoppe to elaborate on this, but Centec, instead of the current why they're using only two multiplexes, the minister has then asked them to say you can move to the seven multiplexes. And this is really to stimulate, again, our local creative industry. We know that there is a lot of people who are creative in terms of generating content, but we are also going to be embarking on deliberate programs as a department, working with our sister institutions such as NEMISA, SABC and others to really stimulate and produce more local content. This will then assist in terms of your community broadcasters to basically come on the platforms in these multiplexes that will be provided by Centec, but also an opportunity therefore for new emerging players within the creative and broadcasting industries to also come on board, as we would then provide that particular platform for them, Chair. I would like to then move to Honourable Basopu's questions again with regards to still touching on the issues of labour. And what I did indicate is that the recruitment of the installers has been at a local level. I just want to indicate that to date, we have created over 3,100 jobs and over 500 SMMEs, but this number is growing. But as we started the project as well, we also employed your working with the Department of Public Works, and we basically have over 1,000 EPW workers that we worked in partnership with the Department of Public Works in as recruiting part of this project. Due to budget cuts, we had to scale down, but we still now, through USASA, have employed district developers or district managers. And these are basically, again, where we went and we recruited unemployed youth in as far as ensuring that they go in the various districts to assist with the registration, to assess the progress of, to then also enlighten and work with the local municipalities and local leaderships, including traditional leaders, in as far as creating awareness. And they've been assisting us in monitoring this. We've also placed them still even in the provinces where we have already migrated to ensure that they do the sweep up, and also if then there are still those who are coming forward for registration, we are then able to assist them. And those district developers are obviously placed in all our provinces throughout the country, and they're basically employed under USASA. And then with regards to the progress that the Honourable Basoko also asked about the district development model, as I indicated that after we have finished the migration, in the new financial year, we will therefore embarking on a new project with regards to the data capturing. And this data capturing is part of the digitization of government. So it's not just for the department. We've already received requests from the Department of Human Settlements, as well as the Department of Labor, to then say the data capturing must also, they should also assist in as far as ensuring that they digitize the information that they need in those respective departments. And so this is then the project that we will be doing in as far as the district development model. But more so to say, also from our perspective as a department, we do have a district development project where then we also assess working with the Department of COCTA, and this is part of why then in the SA Connect we've included the issue of connecting traditional housing or traditional leaders offices or points of residence, is because we want to ensure as we roll out the SA Connect phase two, that the connectivity, there's Wi-Fi hotspots in those areas in order to serve the community. But more than anything, we've got an NTSF target as a country of ensuring that there's 80% broadband access to South African citizens by 2024. So by us ensuring that over those 8,000 district traditional leaders, that's part of the initial phase of phase two, to have them connected in order then for them to be able to serve as a point of presence in terms of government services, but also for communities within their respective communities, that they would also then receive Wi-Fi and as well as broadband access. Chair, with regards to your question on SA Connect and the concern with the understanding, I just wanted to indicate that even in the previous years where we mentioned that there were cuts, the budget cuts, it was not for our doing, Chair. The budget cuts came on as a result of the government needed to inject in other priority projects. So previously, as you would know, there was the program in as far as looking for resources to subsidize the university students soon after the Fees Must Fall initiative, and therefore a huge bulk of what was then earmarked for SA Connect was then redeployed for then the Fees Must Fall or the Fees Scheme program. And then subsequent thereafter, we also suffered another budget cost as budget cut as a department under COVID, where then we had to release some of those funding to then again assist with regard to other critical COVID addressing the pandemic initiatives that government was undergoing. So as such, we then had to look at a smart model in as far as to say connectivity is still very critical for the country, especially under the circumstances that we are in and the country in terms of COVID or the disaster management period and working remotely. But also we need the connectivity as we then embark in terms of the 4IR as well as you said 5G So in order for us to ensure the modernization of the economy and stimulating other industries, we needed to make sure that broadband access is readily available for all, and not just looking at the government institutions in the main. So our phase two, especially for our state-owned entities, is purely going to be focused in terms of community connectivity. And yes, Chair, there is a collaboration already that has started between CENTEC and BDI in ensuring that there is the community. But more importantly, as part of also a very critical need of ensuring the transformation within our sector, and to therefore allow both new entrants as well as those who are marginalized, and I'm talking about your ISPs, your wireless access service providers, as well as your mobile virtual operators, and even the SMMEs who have also been creative in terms of the deployment of technology and connectivity in rural and remote areas. We want to bring them on board, Chair, and therefore what we've said is that the SDIC, whilst the core network in the country, which is then the main network, will be owned by the state. The last mile is actually then going to be deployed by these SMMEs, and we're looking for innovative solutions at a much more cost-effective model to ensure that the communities are connected. So the department led by the minister and the deputy minister will have already started engaging these ISPs, WEPs, as well as other service providers in as far as then this project is concerned. And we're again looking to ensure that the recruitment is going to be done at a district as well as a provincial level. So we want to ensure scalability of the project, but allowing therefore more entrants to also participate within the ecosystem, Chair. With regards to the 4IR project, I think your first comment, Honourable Chair, with regards to the implementation and the visibility of the project, we were definitely about to ensure that we illustrate that more concretely, because what we did, the team really did extensive consultation. And yes, there's a lot of work that is being done by other sectors, industries, as well as government departments. What is most exciting is that we've decided to pick a few of these initiatives as our department, but working again with the private sector as well as industry partners in as far as the execution thereof. And these are the ones that DDG Baki has alluded to. Chair, with regards to your last questions on the SOCs, may I humbly ask then that I can hand over to DDG Shelembe to just clarify the issues with regards to the applicable laws, and also if he has that information as to how many have been resolved from the SOC perspective. And I would also like to hand over to Mr. Tebogo Leshope in case that there are some questions, or if you would like to further elaborate on some of the points that I have alluded to. With your permission, DM, let me hand over to Mr. Leshope as well as then DDG Shelembe. Thank you.
Thank you, ADG. Yes, I'll comment on the two issues related to the technology lifecycle management. Indeed, Chairperson, the focus of the ADG highlighted will be that the set-top box technology will come to end of life and needs to be replaced. What we are seeing from technology foresight's point of view is that the set-top box will be replaced with a smart box that is internet enabled. So that is where our focus is. The second evolution area is the smart digital television. So the set-top box will also automatically be replaced by the IDTVs. And then the evolution is also on online television. So some of the citizens who will be able to receive television on the devices. Currently, it's called over-the-top OTT. So it supplements the main, the conventional platforms. But in future, it will become the main. It's growing very strongly towards being the main. That's also a focus area. And then the satellite. Satellite is growing very strongly in South Africa because of its reach and then content accessibility as well. So that's also one area of focus. You will see us going into the future talk a bit more around satellite capability launches and the likes. ADG touches on the strategy going forward, but these are the key areas where media consumption is evolving to. And then on the question raised by Dr. Basopu in terms of local economy development, indeed, it is our focus. We confirm, Dr. Basopu, that we have focus on local economic development objectives, particularly on SMEs and job creations. All the entities that we have appointed to do the installations on VDM are SMEs, small companies, Dr. Basopu. There is a total of 508 companies that we are engaging to assist government to roll out this particular project, creating 3,109 job opportunities. And the financial beneficiation and economic impact goes to these jobs and these entities, Chairperson Dr. Basopu. Thank you, ADG.
Thank you, Mr. Lechopez. DG Shalende.
Thank you very much, DG, and thank you very much to the chair for the question. First of all, I think really one needs to be grateful for the acknowledgement of what the law provides for in terms of the different roles played by the different segments of the accountability chain. That's what the law provides for. But that notwithstanding, we do stick our necks out into probing and pushing and ensuring that consequence management does indeed take place at the right level where it is supposed to take place. Chair, you made an example of that we're just showing the numbers that 8 resolved but 2 not resolved without showing the details of what about the 2 that is not resolved. We felt it will be too bulky because if you look at the numbers, they go into hundreds if you add up on the findings of the entities. We felt it will be too bulky to go into line by line detail per entity. We don't know, perhaps maybe an opportunity could be created at some stage that maybe some selected entities can be requested to visit the portfolio committee with the department to then go into detail of these findings and share with the committee what is being done with respect to them. The chair then makes a specific example of USASA. There has been a lot of consequence management that has taken place at USASA, chair, including the fact that we are currently operating with an interim board because the previous board could not be renewed its term because of this very same dissatisfaction with the performance of the entity. Secondly, a process is underway to give effect to the policy decision of 2016 that USASA shall be dissolved and a new entity be created to look after the Universal Service and Access Fund. That process is also underway and should be going to cabinet soon. So that is all in recognition, Chairperson, of the lack of progress at USASA insofar as the implementation of government program is concerned. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, team. Maybe just for me, some concluding remarks, Chair. I hope that most of the questions have been responded to and in quite technical detail. I think there's just one which was, I think there was just an oversight. Now, currently, Chair, the set-top boxes that are being installed now are those that have been procured by USASA in the past, a while back, actually. And so they carry a 2-year warranty. So as they get to be installed, if there's anything wrong with these set-top boxes, the beneficiaries can call and get them to be replaced by the manufacturers, because they carry that warranty, which is 2 years. After 2 years, as the colleagues are saying, technology changes, and it changes at a very rapid speed. So in 2 years, what we're envisioning is something else that I think the colleagues have spoken to. Now, there is a call center that has been established as part of the aftermarket support, which has been administered currently by Centec. So if there are any issues with the installation, with the working of the device, beneficiaries are able to call this call center, which has been administered by Centec, and their queries and complaints will be attended to. But after the analog switch off, after this program, which as we are saying that the end of March is going to be a complete switch over or switch off. So after this, the intention is that the SABC will take over that that call center and administer it as we go ahead. So I think that is something that maybe needed to be clarified just a bit. We welcome, Chair, your positive comments about the progress of the BDM. We're also excited about it because it's finally been delivered. You'll recall, Chair, in the past we made some comments that it's quite disappointing that South Africa was part of the first countries that were leading the pack, and we got to delay because of a number of things. We targeted 2015 to switch off. It did not happen. There were a lot of litigations in between, and we're here now. And so we are very happy that finally we are going to make sure that the country migrates and we get to be on digital platforms finally. So the issue of the installers, I think it has been resolved. There's been engagement with Treasury, and that's why we're no longer experiencing problems about the SMME is complaining about the market rate of the rate at which they have been paid to do the installation. So that has been resolved. I think it's one area that we didn't talk to. The others, I think the colleagues did speak to that, including the redirecting of funds. Now, Chair, you make a specific reference to your staff. and I think as Mr. Shilembe is saying, if there is any area that you wish that you need to be briefed on regarding any of the entities, I think we are willing to do that, to get that particular entity to come and brief you on a specific area that you are requesting. Because as he says, if we can bring all of those issues here, it's going to be a very, very bulky submission to yourself, because we do it on a regular basis. The SOE branch monitors the performance of the entity. We do feedback through the shareholder entity. So we do have a lot of information about the performance in all areas, the financial and non-financial performance. But with regard to you, SASA Chair, maybe just to confirm that the idea is still to disestablish the entity. And we're working on that. The board's term of office is coming to an end in February. We were working on getting it extended so that we can finalize this disestablishment process. So as it is, that still continues to be our plan to finally disestablish the entity for various reasons, including the performance and other issues. I think some of the questions have been sufficiently covered. On the district development model, which is the delivery model of this administration, I can confirm to Dr. Basoku that we are committed to it as we roll out our programs, even as we consult with the provinces. This is the model that we are using, because we believe that it takes us closer to the communities, where we use the district as a delivery space. So we can confirm that we still do believe in that, and this is what we are working on. Now, you can see, Chair, that there is a very strong partnership on the SA Connect between the industry, the players in the industry, and the state-owned entities, BBI as well as Centec. Now, as we are saying that we have included the obligation, the minister has been in engagement with the ICASA. Industry is aware that there are social obligations, because the bulk of the connectivity will be undertaken by these industry players. And therefore, it's important that as we go ahead, we put that understanding. This time around, the minister has ensured that it is not just social obligations that are going to be ignored. There will be consequences for not complying with those social obligations, which the state will, there are mechanisms that have been put in place to make sure that these obligations are carried, and we connect the site, the schools, the health facilities, and the traditional authorities, all of which are going to be connected by the industry players. And then, of course, our two entities will then focus on connecting connectivities and households. And as the DG is saying, there is a role to be played by the SMEs the last mile. So, Chair, basically that is that from our side. I hope that we have been able to cover all the questions that you have posed to us. And thank you very much for the engagement. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister and the team. I just want to check if there may be follow-up questions from members, so that if not, we are able to conclude on this item.
I don't see any hands, Chairperson.
So thank you. I think in concluding this item, like we said, we do appreciate the feedback you've given to us, and we'll take other matters forward. I know we would also be having quarterly reports that would consider also from the entities. We have made it as part of our resolution tracking system as the committee, that whenever entities or the department comes before us, always keep in mind the matters that we have raised and we didn't get feedback on that you can clarify. And maybe just to clarify the point about USASA, indeed there I was specific because of its centrality in delivering on the program and what would have happened before, which led to no delivery. We stood as the committee to support IDTV's procurement. In the middle of that, 6 employees suspended. Then we did not have treasury condoning or approving a rollover. So we lost that. But we had a resolution, which was not an easy one to get through, because there were members who really believed that they do not have capacity to deliver that project. And indeed, that was the case. So I'm just saying we have to at all times bear this in mind. Not that we would want to have every detail, but we do expect that those matters that make us not to be able to make the progress we need to make indeed brought to the attention. So I just hope we have an understanding on that. It's not really a demand to bring 153 queries before us that the AG may have raised. But some are the matters we have handled as the committee, which would need feedback on as per our resolution tracking system. Otherwise, we would really keep an eye on whether we are able to meet every deadline that we have set up for ourselves. We can't fail on this. We have to succeed. So our questions should also be understood in that way, that it's about making ourselves to succeed on reaching our goals that we have set ourselves. So with that, thank you, Deputy Minister and the team. And I would want to really indicate that the next item, which is a committee report to be adopted, which is the matters that we have dealt with as the committee, if there would be those that would want to be excused, would still allow you to be excused so that you go back and indeed look at those projects that are fire related and brief us next time so that when you communicate outside there, it should be clear that we are not just in perpetual planning like they would perceive the same, but we can show on the ground that this is what we do practically so, and this is our changing the lives of our people for better. So would release you in that score if you would want to. Otherwise, you can still stay on the platform for those who would want to stay as we deal with the last item on adoption of the report. So I do see that the Deputy Minister would want to be excused. So all others, the same, as I said, if you would want to be please feel free to do so as we move to the next item. The next item is on the report. What we usually do is to go through the report and members would raise any point they want to raise, whether it's for correction, whether it's to clarify even the content. We do that. We'll then move with speed. Page 2. On page 3 now. Move to page 4. 5. Six, seven. Well done. Oh, just take it slow there. On page 8, on observations, honorable members, so that if you want to raise a point there, because that's what reflects what analysis is as the committee, and then the recommendations we are making thereof. Okay, page 9. If nothing on page 9, you can then move to recommendations. On the recommendations, I think what was like coming out clear from me is it IX? Correct me there. My understanding was that it's 1.5 million.
Honorable Chair, I'll revert back to you on that. I just have to check again.
The reason I'm raising it is that I tried to go back to it, that it was related to a conference, as fees for conference. But as I say, if CETA indicates differently, I will accept that in the final report, but I seem to have heard them to be saying 1.5 million for conference fees, which they are recovering. Right. Now, again, what will be the wording? CETA is just the confirming that it's 1.5 million, not billion. But again, I think there was something also on the license fees. I think that will be what X. That will be X, which is page 9, right? That's below the point I was correcting. Yeah, because the thing is that on the higher up there, we are talking to the ministry. I think the wording, therefore, would be support, because this is already an initiative by CETA, so that it's not instructive as though it's something new, but that the ministry supports CETA's recovery plan of all finances obtained illegally by companies for unused software licenses across the state, because it's not just about the entity, but it's across across the state. And I'm using the word plan because they would have indicated that part of the plan is to ensure that for future procurement, they would not make advance payments, but pay as per use, which is then at the end of the period. So that's how I would have also understood that point.
Chairperson, yes. Could you just repeat that X, please? Could you just repeat it?
Yeah. What I'm saying on X, is that if you read it from the statement up there, because we were talking to the minister doing it, that instead of it being something to just remove the department, because we've already spoken to the minister up there, support CETA's plan to continue to recover all finances obtained illegally by companies for unused software licenses across the state. Yeah, so those were the points I noted. Otherwise, the capturing was, in my view, fine. But I just thought we should clear it. Otherwise, we'll be chasing numbers that will not be able to get there. Right, go down. Again, the XV and XV. One, right, I'm not sure if that could have not been combined into one, because the two points we are making there, was that, remember, this is in response to devolving some of, or reallocating back some of the procurement tasks to the departments. But the concern of the committee was more to say, even when that happens, let's just ensure the transparency, accountability as per the digital platforms that CETA would have created to ensure that happens. Amid also reallocating their procurement tasks to departments, which were given assurances, the committee, that even whilst that happens, but the system and the digital platforms that have been put, CETA will still play the role of ensuring that that happens in that score. So I don't want us to leave it just as stakeholders' communication, then have something else. If you can just find a way of wording it to be one line combined. If committee members would agree, even if we approve the report, that because I didn't do my notes with me now, I'll still have to just rework it again. If you so agree, so that you understand the point I'm trying to communicate there, which is a response to a point we have raised as a committee, so that our recommendation is clear. So I can work with the support staff and the content advice on that, if the meeting so agrees, so that we do not delay the adoption of the report itself. So those would be the points I wanted to raise, but I'll just check if members would want to adopt that approach as therefore a way of adopting this report, which will then need a formal mover with that and a second. I still don't see hands on my side.
Congrats, Chair. Good day.
Honorable Mtembu.
Good day to you and all members of the committee. Just propose adoption of the report. Thank you.
Honorable Mtembu, may I get a second? So I need a seconder. I hope members could still hear me. And that seconder could be only between Honorable Majosi that I see on the platform, and Honorable Dr. Basok, because the other two members were not fully appointed to.
I second the amendment.
Then the Soito is back. Honorable Majosi seconds the adoption of the report. So the report is then agreed to. Ajira, is there any other item?
Chairperson, if Chairperson could just indicate the 22nd of March, the intended changes to the program. Thank you.
Okay, so there's no other item other than
No, no other item change.
Okay, no, thank you. Now, honorable members, I just wanted to then clarify a few points before we close the meeting. That initially, Ajira would have said, there would have been minutes and a report on the petition. Of course, that report would have not been processed accordingly. I'm sure for those of you who have gone then through the report when you had your time, you'll then understand that there were issues that were not really related to the petition, but more of the concerns that members had with regard to SAPO. And we had agreed to bring SAPO back so that we also look at the turnaround strategy, and we'll do this at least beyond the budget speech, so that other matters that were raised as possible things to happen could then be taken care of. In that regard, with ICASA unable to come before the committee, we would then have agreed that because the committee had agreed, we can bring forward SAPO, and that we can then take SAPO to the 15th. So that's one reason we had to go clean up that report. So SAPO will then be back on the 15th. Secondly, because I had clarified it in the meeting that we need to close the part about the petition itself, so that our report goes to the House talking to the petition and not be all over in terms of general problems of SAPO. So we'll then take this report back on the 8th of March, which is the indication we're giving to the House. So we'll adopt a cleaned up report, which should be able to get an update on in preparation for the 8th of March. So the report would be adopted, including the minutes thereof, because the minutes talk to the same report. I hope members do understand that difference, because it's very important, and that you also prepare yourselves for a discussion on SAPO on the 15th of March. So we thought we could still do this in this term, even though we have a shorter period to do. There's also a change in terms of the program. There are requests that have been made and referrals made to the committee. So we're also proposing to change the Vets Link Center webinar that we're going to have. We can still look at having that at another time, because in the previous year we were able to do it even in the evening, 1 hour, 2 hour class. But there is a request for the committee to hear a presentation on the 2021 local government elections media report, which is not really the report we received from ICASA, but from another institution that monitors media in the continent. especially at the time of elections, in a way that would also help the committee to make a better reflections in that regard. There's also another, I think, referral to the committee from the House that will also try and put in on that day of the 22nd of March. Otherwise, the issue that relates to the oversight visit, the dates that were communicated by Parliament, which we also adopted as part of our program, will continue. The only matter that MENCO is seized with, which would be able to reconvene it as a result of miscommunication that could have been there, it convening MENCO, would be really to look at the fact that our portfolio is big in terms of entities that report to it, as well as the departments. We have two departments that report to this committee, as well as a number of entities, is to look at other possible dates and make an application in that regard, taking advantage that all our committee meetings are more of virtual, and we can be able to still do effective oversight without compromising the Parliament program. That's what we want to bring to the attention of Parliament, that with funding permitting, would want a positive consideration in that regard, so that we can confirm that things that get presented before the committee can also be seen when we do oversight visiting these areas and so on. So I thought it's important that members are aware of that, and I take it that there's agreement in that regard, that firstly we can bring SAP on the 15th and replace the one of CASA. Secondly, that we consider the adoption of the report on the petition on the 8th, including the minutes thereof, as well as on the 22nd of March, on that space of the Wetzling Center, we bring this media monitoring report on local government elections and the referral that has been central to the committee. I take it that members that's agreed to, so that the administration can then do the planning. They can then contact you directly with regard to your preparations for the oversight visit, 29 March to 1st of April. So that will be with regard to that program. The last point I wanted to raise, honorable members, before we close our meeting, is that we have had subcommittees that looked at the SAPC board vacancy, because there was one vacancy there. Then the two vacancies in the MDDA board, as well as the four vacancies in the ICASA Council. These are matters we should have been able to finalize quicker. And from the committee side or subcommittee side, we have been able to complete all that needed to be completed, except for the deliberations which the committee must have at this level. With the changes in the members, I know that from the ANC, with Honorable Faku almost in all three, who has now been replaced with Honorable Dr. Basso. In the Democratic Alliance, we had Honorable Mbele, who I also believe would have briefed the new members on the work done thus far. and that would want to have also that work finalized this week. We're trying to make an application for a Friday, understanding that it's usually an open day. Once that is approved, we would proceed accordingly. And that's the reason I would want to know from the Democratic Alliance, who's the whip for the committee. And I want to confirm what has been sent through to me by committee support staff, that Honorable Malatsi, you are the whip for the committee on behalf of the Democratic Alliance.
Chairperson, that is correct. I submitted that to Hajir.
Okay, no, thank you. I'll then make contact post the meeting with the whips just for us to be able to agree with regards to times and so on, because I also have to take into consideration the party work and tasks that you could be deployed in by the party. But the proposed day was really to look at this Friday, have the subcommittees and the committee to adopt the report on the same day, so that we then write our report to the House, and that the matter could then serve before the House, and ultimately where it's the ministerial, the minister would be able to handle, where is the president, and the president is able to finalize such appointments. But as I said, I will be making contact immediately after this meeting. Otherwise, thank you, honorable members, for your time, contributions, until we meet again. This meeting would have completed its business, and it stays adjourned until we meet in the next meeting on day. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.